Good morning. I encourage you to get your outlines out if you have one. If you don't, they're in the back, inside of the bulletin. The AM side, that the eye is the lamp of the body. Deuteronomy 15 seems perhaps like a strange place to begin. I found this study personally through the concept of the eye and what all is happening in the scriptures concerning the eye fairly fascinating. In fact, especially the cultural situation, as we'll get into it as it comes along. But notice there, if you are still there in Deuteronomy chapter 15, an evil thought or a wicked thought in your mind, that your heart or your heart is hardened against your brother, and that your eye would be evil concerning the situation that your brother is in. And all that leading up into an idea of not being concerned at all about his situation. In fact, only being resolved to think about yourself. As we open our Bibles here, Matthew chapter 5 and verse 22. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 22, he says, "The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness?" The eyes have a particular place in our culture even. In most cultures, the eyes are a gateway to the soul, they would say. That you can see sometimes in people's eyes a malevolent intent. I know certainly there is a level of sarcasm that can be and joined with the eye when the eye is rolled. And there are times where a person's smile will not carry all the way to the eye. Where you can put on a happy face, but the eyes don't speak to the joy that your smile seems to imply. He says here that your eye is the lamp of your body. And then he uses the word therefore. Because this is the case that the lamp of the body is the eye. If the eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. And if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. It's interesting. The word here for good, in some translations will have the word clear, some will have the word healthy. The weird thing is that all of those words exist in the New Testament elsewhere, but this word, the word for good here, is only found one other place. And that's where we're going to be in Luke chapter 11. Where Luke records this same event happening. So Jesus uses a word in the Koine Greek that we're not terribly sure what it means, which is why many translations translate it in different ways, whether good or healthy or clear. But if you look at the opposite concept, it's pretty clear, it's pretty obvious what Jesus is getting at. Notice, even if we can't really understand in the specific, the word he's using here, if the eye is good, the whole body is full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. Now, the word clear seems to make the most sense as far as we understand the metaphor. Because if you have a lamp and the glass or the lens of that lamp is cloudy or dirty, it's not going to project any light. That less or no light is going to get through. In fact, there are some individuals, they buy a blackout for their windows. Maybe because they're supposed to sleep through the day because they're going to be awake at night. Because they work a third shift or whatnot. So if the lens or the outside of the lamp, if that which comes in contact with the world is not clear, is not good, is not healthy, it is going to affect every other part of your life. Notice also the dichotomy here, the dual nature of the eye. Your eye is either good or bad, clear or cloudy, healthy or unhealthy, depending on how you perceive that word to be used. It doesn't really matter as far as the meaning of the passage. If your eye is not prepared to see, if it has not been prepared to see, notice in Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21, you either lay up treasures on earth or you lay up treasures in heaven. You can't do both. And then 24 and 25, you either serve God or you serve anything else. You can't do both. The dichotomy or the dual nature of these passages speaks to the fact that your eye is either going to be healthy and your body or your self is going to be full of light, or it's going to be unhealthy and it's going to be filled with darkness. Now, what does that mean? It seems to be tied, as far as we can tell through the scriptures there in Deuteronomy 15, we noticed, it had to do with the perception, how the person views the world. And so he looks over the world and he has a brother come to him and request, maybe he even asks for help. And if you see a poor brother, a poor person in your gates, the gates of the city, where you're responsible for assisting and providing for those of your neighbors, and you come to a point where you might very well purchase the rest of their time before the days where they would be released from any kind of slavery or servanthood. And you say, yeah, well, okay, I suppose I could pay this money to you and you could be my servant, but it's the sixth year already, which means I would only get 1 year of service from you. And rather than consider the need of the individual, you consider your own profitability. You concern yourself only with what you can gain out of it. That's a perspective issue. That's an issue of the heart, as he talks about there. That evil thought that comes to mind because of the hardness of your heart. In Matthew chapter 20, he uses this concept again. When Jesus tells the story of the vine dresser who went out and offered everyone throughout the day the same wage, didn't matter whether it was the very morning or he was almost a couple of hours before the day was over. And he offers them all the same amount. And when he begins paying the later workers first, the earlier workers, seeing their pay, they expect more than they agree to. And they think that such a thing is due them. They get to the point where they not only anticipate and are hopeful, perhaps, but they get angry when he doesn't offer them more, when he doesn't give them more, as their concept of the world changes in relation to what they see. In Matthew chapter 20 and verse 15, notice the words of that vine dresser. He says, "Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with my own things?" How often have you perhaps felt the need to say this kind of thing to the world? When the world tells you what it is to be a Christian, even though they don't have the slightest idea. Because they want something. Because they have an anticipation that because you're a Christian, that you're going to help in whatever capacity they have in mind. And when you don't help them in the capacity that they want, they have that evil eye. They perceive that they're going to get something that you don't give them. So you must be evil because of it. And what does Jesus say there? The same thing perhaps we should say. Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with my own things? Or is your eye evil because I am good? Now, what was the problem? Your perception of the situation is wrong. You agreed to work for this pay, and you were happy when it was this pay. So what changed? Your perspective changed, your view changed because of what you saw and because of the hardness of your heart. If you were a righteous individual and not a greedy one, then this amount would have been perfectly satisfactory to you. It would have been just as satisfactory as when you agreed to it. But because you feel slighted, because you didn't get what you perceive to be your due, even though you agreed, your greed shows through. In Proverbs 28, verse 22, a man with an evil eye hastens after riches and does not consider that poverty will come upon him. A man with an evil eye hastens after riches, he says, and does not consider that poverty will come upon him. One whose perception often is skewed by his worldview, by the way he thinks and the way he acts, but also by what he perceives. And the question, not only here in the first century and in the continuance of the New Testament, but the question that we struggle with today even, does the lamp project outward or inward? Now, yeah, that might seem like a ridiculous question to us in the Western world, but you have lights that project in and you have lights that project out on the front of my house, there is a light, and it projects outward. And for the most part, it says welcome, or it says we're home, or it says something. I'm not exactly sure what it says. But usually, if I'm expecting someone to arrive, I turn the light on, especially if it's going to be dark, because I want them to feel safe. I want them to feel like I know they're coming, and so it projects outward from my home. But you also have lights inside of your home, do you not? That when it gets dark, you turn the light on so that you can see around. So does it project outward or does it project inward? What's Jesus talking about here? And I suspect he may very well be talking about both. The answer is yes. Don't you hate those when they give you two choices and you say yes? Yeah. As far as the Western perspective, that would be us and the way we oftentimes think and conclude. We would say things like, children are sponges. And that's certainly the case. We think about often how we can manage the amount of the world that gets into our children. We try to minimize as much as possible the bad experiences that they're going to be a part of, that they are going to experience in this life. We try to limit, perhaps and hopefully, the amount of crude language or jesting, the amount of inappropriate material on television or in movies, all kinds of media sources that our children have access to, because we say things like garbage in, garbage out. And that is absolutely true. Biblically, it's also true. In Luke chapter 11, the passage we were talking about, that parallel passage, Luke's accounting of this very thing. Luke chapter 11, in verse 33, Jesus says, "No one, when he has lit a lamp, puts it in the secret place or under a basket, but on a lampstand, that those who come in may see the light." Those who come in may see the light. Interesting. "The lamp of the body is the eye. Therefore, when your eye is good, your whole body also is full of light. But when your eye is bad, your body also is full of darkness. Therefore," notice 35, "therefore take heed that the light which is in you is not darkness." Now, that might seem kind of counterintuitive. That the light in you is not darkness, and we would, from a 21st century perspective, say, well, that doesn't make any sense, because darkness is the opposite of light. It is the absence of light. But from a theological perspective, darkness casts just as nasty of a shadow. Even though we understand that it's the absence of light in a physical system, that's not how the Bible uses the concept of darkness. It uses the concept of darkness as something that spreads, even though darkness doesn't technically spread. Not in a physical sense. How can the darkness be projected? Well, you have seen people. You have seen the influence that the world can have on folks, that a small group of people can have, even over a large group of people, to encourage ungodliness and unrest, to encourage them to do disreputable and evil things. There are certainly some things that I wish I could unsee. Because the truth is, while we focus on children and we put our minds to solving the problem of how our children are being corrupted in the school system or through television and other media, what we have to reconcile is that they are not the only sponge in the house. We are just as much sponges. And what we perceive and what we see and what we allow ourselves to be subjected to by this world affects us. Affects how we think and how we feel and how we talk. So even though you would say, well, yes, but you don't hear with your eyes, he's talking about your experiences in this world. So what you see and what you hear and the experiences that you have, they influence you as an individual, as hopefully a Christian. And they can influence you for the better, or they can influence you for the worse. And Jesus says, be careful, be mindful, think about what you are exposing yourself to, because you don't want that light that is inside of you to be turned to darkness. So in one aspect, yes, it is turned inward. The lamp, what you perceive, affects the inside of you, your soul, effectively, in the decision-making that you make. We say things like, well, yeah, I correct, or I accept that the corruption spreads when I... But I keep it within my control. That's what we tell ourselves anyway. We say, well, I've determined how much of this ungodliness I'm able to stand. Wait, that sounds ridiculous when you say it out loud. Try it sometime, because it sounds ridiculous when I say it. And as often as I would like to say it to myself, Jesus did not want us to be taken out of the world, but he did not mean for us to invite the world into our hearts. John chapter 17 and verse 15. He tells God in his prayer for not only his disciples, but all that would follow him according to those apostles' words. He tells God that it is not his desire for God to remove them from the world, his followers. It was never God's intent. And Paul argues the same thing, that it's not God's intent that we remove ourselves from the world itself, but that we try to remove the world from us. See, a ship has no issue when it's on the water. It's when the water gets inside that the ship has an issue. And I'll tell you, friends, we let the world in. We make a gangplank for the world. We just let it run right up our... right up that plank and right into our storehold. And we pretend like it's not infesting all that is within that ship. And brethren, it is. What we see affects how we think. In Psalm 101 and verse 3, he says, I will... This is David. David, he says, I will set nothing wicked before my eyes. I hate the work of those who fall away. It shall not cling to me. He suggests that the things that we set before our eyes not only influence us, but the word he uses here is cling. That they cling to us. That we have a hard time shaking them off. And I'll tell you, I've seen some things in my life that I had a hard time getting over. I have seen some awful atrocities. Some that were intended to remind me of how awful humanity can be. I've seen documentaries about the travesties of humanity and the awful things that people are capable of, like the concentration camps and Auschwitz and Dachau. And I would not want to watch them again. And I don't know that I'm glad I watched them the first time, but they enlightened me. And they taught me something. But I have also seen things that I could have done without seeing. That I would prefer to have not seen. Because I have a hard time unseeing them. And to remove those kinds of things, not only from our children, but hey, perhaps even our own lives. That we can purify the lens by which we see the world. That we don't have to indulge in every earthly and sensual and unrighteous thing this world has to offer, because we recognize that as garbage comes in, so garbage will come out of us. The things we hear and we see will affect who we are intrinsically. They will cling to us. In Psalm 16 and verse 8, he says, I have set the Lord always before me. He says, because he is at my right hand and I shall not be moved. And yeah, we do that sometimes, don't we? We take the time to study our Bibles, and we absolutely should. And we take the time to be here, and we absolutely should. But do we replace that which we could see in this world with what we should see in the Word of God? What we should see in the majesty of God's presence in this world and how he has exemplified his will towards us, that we could be projectors of that light, not just receivers. Now, we should be receivers of that light. We should be individuals who study our Bibles, who spend time thinking about the glories of God and the majesty that he is. But then it must turn outward. We must have that light that goes outward as well. So the lamp, yeah, is both. Both inward, but also, as the Eastern perspective would be, it must also be outward. Now, you have seen the eye be used in some pretty awful things. Like the mom look. Anyone who has a mom who has mastered the mom look knows what I'm talking about. It is that look a mother can give you that makes you feel centimeters tall. And it's usually not because they are angry, but because they are disappointed. But because you have done something that was not in keeping with who your mother thought you were or who your mother taught you to be. Looks have a power to them. And in the Eastern communities, there is the idea of an evil eye. And it seems very much like mysticism from a Western perspective. The idea almost as if your eye were possessed. Now, we have in the Western culture, that's us, Western. Eastern is the other side of the world. But in the Western culture, we have something called idle hands that a lot of people ascribe to, the idea that if you don't make your hands do what is good, they will find what is evil. And even some weird ideas that hands actually gain a mind of their own and become almost possessed. Now, apply that to your eye, because that's essentially what the evil eye was to Eastern cultures. Now, is Jesus saying that your eye can effectively become possessed or even do harm to someone simply because you look at a person with an evil eye? Well, no. Jesus is saying what harm we can do goes well beyond the look that we can give people. It is in the way we judge and the perceptions that we give and how that perception, how that mind or heart that we have, that soul that has either been corrupted or pushed in the ways of godliness, how it emboldens our life, how it changes who we are, because what we think affects how we act. We'd like it to be otherwise, but that's exactly how it is. What we think affects how we act, which goes back to why we should be very careful on what we take in. Because if what we see affects how we think, and how we think affects how we act, then what we see affects how we act. In Proverbs 23 and verse 6 and 7, he says, "Do not eat the bread of the miser, nor desire his delicacies. For as he thinks in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you." See, a miser is one who does not want to feed you. But he certainly does not want to send you away without feeding you if he's supposed to feed you. So he doesn't want to feed you. He doesn't want to give you what you really need if you are impoverished. And he says, don't take in the ideas of a miser. Right? Don't be, in Deuteronomy 15, that individual who looks on a situation and instead of seeing the need, sees your greed. That's what that individual in Deuteronomy 15 is doing. He has transformed his heart into a hardened stone. And when he sees a person in need, he does not see the need. He sees an obligation. He sees a person who is trying to steal from him. And while he might respect, a miser might respect his cultural obligation, might respect the need that he has to fulfill, he doesn't want to. And so he says, don't follow along with the miser. Because while he may feed you, as he thinks in his heart, so is he. Whatever comes out of your mouth isn't necessarily how you feel. I don't know if you've realized that in this world. But just because people say something doesn't mean that they truly believe it. Or just because they say the right thing doesn't mean they're willing to do the right thing. It is, in fact, what comes out of us that defiles us. We made reference to this a lot lately in Mark chapter 7, verses 20 through 23. And he said, "What comes out of a man, that defiles a man. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness," and the list keeps going. And in fact, the next one seems the most interesting in our context. "An evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness, all these evil things come from within and defile a man." So where does that evil eye come from? Well, it comes from within, which implies in the context that Jesus is using it here, that it is coming out. The way you perceive the world, the way you perceive other people, will change how you deal with them. We say things like, again, going back to the Western perspective, be careful little eyes what you see. And then we say, be careful little mouths what you say. Well, perhaps we need another verse. And rather it be about little mouths, it should be about big mouths. Be careful big mouths what you say. Perhaps it should be careful big mouths where you go. Be careful big mouths what you do. Because the Father up above is looking down in love. What's that song meant to imply? What's that song meant to teach? That we should see things the way God sees things. The Lord looks down on us not only in the aspect of love, and we appreciate that, we need to appreciate that, and we don't always appreciate that. But more precisely, that should be the way we look at things. That as we ingest the world, we should be protective of the lens so that we don't cloudy it up with the world. So that we don't destroy the soul that's inside with the things that we subject it to. But then we should take what we have created inside of ourselves and what the Lord has purified and cleansed, that soul and that perspective that the Lord is trying to give us, we need to take it and then bring it out of ourselves as well. So that lens needs to not only be inward but also outward. That as we see things in this life and as we are compelled to learn and to study and to grow in our relationship with God and see the best in this world, that then projects out of us so that we're not that individual in Deuteronomy 15. Rather, instead of hardening our hearts to our brother in need, what does James chapter 3 and 1 John chapter 3 both suggest we should do? James chapter 2 and 1 John chapter 3 both suggest we should do to a brother in need. But help them. Not see them as a burden upon our life and upon our wealth and upon the decisions. Well, I guess I can't do this now because I have to help my brother. But rather, we should be emboldened to carry the love of God with us and then to employ the love of God, to shine as a light unto this world. Be that city that cannot be hidden. Because the love of God is in us. Because the righteousness of God can be projected out of us. Be careful, big mouth, what you say. Protect that lamp that your soul would be pure and you would project the righteousness and the love of God. And that begins by being saved through faith and obedience to the gospel of Christ. If you're not a child of God today, you can obey it. You can believe on the Lord Jesus Christ. You can confess your sins, repent of them, be baptized for the remission of those sins. And then you can go on living your life faithfully to Him each and every day. But you can't do that unless you're willing to turn your soul over to Him. Unless you're willing to turn your perspective and how you think and how you feel and how you react. And the life that you have in this life, recognize that it's no longer yours. But you are a lamp of the light of God. And if we can help you be a better light, if we can help you clean that lens so that both inwardly and outwardly you project the light of the love of God, we can help you. Whatever you need, I pray that you would come as together we stand and sing.